Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. You know, before they were legends of outlaw country, they were lost souls looking for their sound. Don't miss Mandy Moore and the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the rise of outlaw country music and its biggest stars. Hear how one woman's vision in her tiny living room, far from Nashville's Music Row, became the epicenter of a musical movement. Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in The Boar's Nest. Listen now at audible.com/The Boar's Nest. This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p. Hey, it's Bobby Bones. Hey, I just want to say thanks to everybody who has stepped up for the St. Jude kids. St. Jude's doing incredible work fighting childhood cancer. And because of donations like the ones that you give, families never receive a bill ever from St. Jude for treatment, travel, housing, food, none of that. Help St. Jude stop childhood cancer. Become a partner in hope. Get this awesome new This Shirt Saves Lives shirt. It's going to look great on you. So join all the doctors, researchers, and me in this fight. All right, text the word Bobby. It's only 6 numbers to 785-833. Again, text the word Bobby to just these 6 numbers, 785-833.
I'm not going to badmouth today's country music, but I have a friend, a songwriter buddy of mine, that said today's country music sounds like 3 beer commercials strung together because they just don't tell stories anymore. It's like, you're hot, I'm hot, get in the truck.
All right, episode 420, Heath Wright from Ricochet. You'd know Ricochet from Daddy's Money.
She's got her daddy's money. Her mama's good looks, more laughs than a stack of comic books.
What do I know? Which went top three?
I thought freedom meant everything.
And Love is Stronger Than Pride.
If I gotta get down on my knees tonight.
Ricochet, the hits and more, Then and Now, came out on August 18th. They're from Oklahoma. My question is, because my wife ended up coming down. She's only ever been down twice.
Mm-hmm.
She came down to watch this because she knows Heath, because she grew up with Heath, because Heath's older than her, but it's from the same town, basically. Did you set this up because you knew that?
I didn't have any idea. I remembered after the fact that you had mentioned being at a party where he was and performed.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, oh, yeah, that's why.
A funeral.
Wasn't there another situation where they...
Opry.
Okay, yeah. That's what it was.
Yeah. But she said, did Mike... She just knew that you knew. She was like, surely he said... I said, no, I don't think so. I think it's because they have a record out.
Yeah, it was the record.
You know, we try to do a lot of different artists.
I just love doing the 90s country ones.
Yeah, me too. So, all right, Ricochet, they won ACM Award back in the day. It's something I didn't know about them, and you'll hear it later. It's not a spoiler. Who cares? They started as a cover band. It's so rare that that happens, where there's a cover band that's so good, they turn into like a band that's actually making original music. So there they are. Ricochet. For more information, ricochetonline.com. I can't spell Ricochet, though, so good luck.
Google it.
All right, thank you. Here is Heath Wright from Ricochet.
Heath, good to see you, buddy.
You too, Bobby. Good to be here.
My wife is also in the room. She didn't want to be a part of the interview or anything, but she was like, hey, I want to go down and hang out. She's only ever done this twice. Jake Owen, who's a friend of ours, and Ronnie Dunn, who's a friend of ours, and you, who... She's known since she said she was 5 years old. Eight?
Well, I think 0 years
old?
Yeah, I've known your families long before you were born. I grew up with your uncle, Uncle Jeff. Yes.
So how do you know her family?
Well, they're from Vianne, Oklahoma. Her mom and her Uncle Jeff grew up in Vianne, Oklahoma, which is where I'm from. And
oh, you're from Vianne?
I'm from Vianne. Yes. See, I grew up on a cattle ranch just north of Vianne.
Yeah.
Went to all public school all through Vianne. You know, so that's her Uncle Jeff and I like marched in high school band together, along with one of the original members of Ricochet, whom I think you guys know, Greg Cook.
We know Greg. Yeah.
So he's the three of us. We were kind of, you know, we were band nerds back in the day.
So you and Jeff were friends. Mm-hmm. And Jeff and Greg were friends?
Technically, it's more like the other way around. Jeff and Greg were friends. They were in the same class. They graduated in 83. And I was the young kid that just kind of hung out with them. I graduated a couple of years later than them, after them.
We were over at Jeff's house, and he had instruments everywhere in his house. He had, like, horns. And He had like seven horns.
Yeah. Well, he buys things off of, you know, he'll go on Facebook Marketplace and he'll just buy anything that's available and he'll donate it to the school. Because he splits his time between Houston and Vianne now. He retired like at age 43 or something and decided to come back home and bought the oldest house in Vianne, renovated it, and then just started. He's on the Vianne school board now and he does things for our community. He helped bring some industry into Vianne. Like we have a Love's gas station now because of a...
I've been to that Love's many times.
Have you really?
I've been to Vianne many times.
My son works there now.
Really?
Yeah.
So wait, where do you live though?
I live at the cattle ranch just north of there.
Oh, you still live in Vianne?
I grew up in Vianne. I moved off. I came here to Nashville May 18th, 1993. I lived here exactly 15 years. I got the last load of stuff, moved back to my ranch on May 18th, 2008.
We saw you here at the Opry.
Yes.
When you guys played the Opry. And we saw you in Oklahoma. You and Greg played at Caitlin's grandfather's funeral.
Yes.
So I didn't know quite where you lived. I didn't know I mean, it would be nice to live back home, though, wouldn't it?
I mean, I love it. I moved back home in 2008, and I had moved so many times in my career and my life. I just told the guys that helped me get all my stuff back. I said, guys, the next time y'all help me move, you're going to be moving me from here to the funeral home because I'm dying here. I'm never leaving again. But I come back to Nashville every 2 or 3 months to do stuff like this.
So when you guys are putting out the hits and more. Is the name of the record.
It is Then and Now. Ricochet Then and Now, The Hits and More. I don't know why we decided to name it twice, but you know, it's a 16 song project.
But there's new stuff on it.
There is new stuff. Yeah, it's a whole album's worth of new stuff. 10 new songs that we'd kind of, even back when Greg was in the band, we would go in after we left Columbia Records back in 2000. We would go into the studio with a producer and cut 3 or 4 sides. And then 2 or 3 years later, we'd do the same thing when we could afford it. We were self-produced and self-funded back then. So as we could afford it, we would go back into the studio and cut another 2 or 3 sides. And we had 10 songs ready to release and no record label to help us get it out there and distribute it and, you know, nationwide. So it just sort of sat in the can for several years. And so this stuff is some recordings that we did ourselves. Now, when I say that, your viewers probably already know this, but Nashville has a certain way of doing things. Back in the 90s, we weren't even allowed to play on our own records. So,
meaning you had to hire
studio cast. Yeah. I got to play some on the first album and a little bit on the third album. I was the only one in the band that ever played on any of our original stuff.
And that's because the label was like, if we're going to pay for it, we need to hire these specific people to play on it so that it sounds perfect.
Exactly. And you know, like I said, they have a certain way of doing it. Producers like to get it done with over and it's a process. And they wanted to streamline the process as quickly as possible so that they can have more of the production money to put in their own pockets. It's just the way it works. It's just efficiency, you know. And it might take us a little bit longer, but that's all right. It's us playing. So when we went in to do these, every note on the record, all ten new sides, as well as the 6 old songs that we re-recorded, it's us playing, us singing. Some bands don't even get to sing on their own records.
Wait, what?
Yeah, it happens. Some bands.
I only know one.
The lead singer will sing, but they'll bring in harmony guys to do all the harmony vocals.
Why didn't I do that on our comedy record? that'd have been so much easier if I just got somebody to sing for my part. When you put out the new songs, when you record them, I mean, are these songs that you've had for a little bit? You're like, man, I cannot wait to cut these. We feel so good about it. Or did you kind of write them because you were going to do something new?
Well, a little bit of both. Like I said, we weren't chasing radio at the time, so we weren't looking for the next hit. We were just recording songs that we love. So there's going to be some songs on here that your viewers and your listeners wouldn't expect from Ricochet. There's a song, one of my favorites is a tune that Mark Broussard wrote, a tune called The Beauty of Who You Are. And I just, one of the guys brought the song to the bus one day and played it, and I thought, my God, what an amazing vocalist. What a great song. I just love the lyric. It's a real sexy lyric. It starts off with a... There's a soft, sweet space on the back of your neck, smells like rain. There's a way you. There's a way you.
You're turning me on,
baby.
You're turning me on.
Oh, I'm telling you, it's a sexy lyric, and I love and the way he sings, it just sings the hell out of it. And I just wanted to try it, you know, see if I could sing it. And I can't sing it as good as he did, but I tried. I did the best I could. So we got a pretty decent little recording on it. Added some big harmonies to it, the way we do things, and. It's really cool guitar stuff that they managed to hit the red button just at the perfect moment when I was playing good that day. So I don't know. That's one of the tunes on there that's a little different, but we did write some stuff as well. It's one of my favorite tunes on there is a song that our buddy Greg wrote called No Wrong Way to Fall in Love. And it's a story song. That's what I think is the quintessential factor in 90s country. is they're great stories. They tell stories. They take you on a journey. I'm not going to badmouth today's country music, but I have a friend, a songwriter buddy of mine, that said today's country music sounds like three beer commercials strung together because they just don't tell stories anymore. It's like, you're hot, I'm hot, get in the truck. And so, I don't know.
Do you think it's more melody-based?
Yeah, melodies too. And I love songs that start kind of low in my register, like on the verses, and then gives me a chance to really sing out on the top part of my range.
National anthem.
Well, yeah.
Oh, you got to start low. If you start any higher than that, by the time you get to the end, you're cooked.
I'm telling you. And a lot of people worry about the high note. I worry about the low note. I worry, am I going to be able to hit that low note with a lot of good depth and stuff, you know? But, yeah, National Anthem's one of them. And we didn't put that one on the new. We have.
You should have, though. That was the track you should have done, National Anthem. Should have made up a new verse.
It's going to be on the new album. Yeah, I promise.
So the record came out in August.
Yes, sir.
And there's some new stuff on there as well. I kind of want to go back to the origin of the group. And I'm always curious about the name and how many names you had before you actually settled on the name and who did you have other names with? You know, it's kind of like your whole dating history before we talk about your wife. So you started playing music, I'm assuming at a very young age, even if it was like piano or horn or whatever it was because you were in the band.
Well, I started playing guitar. I took my first guitar lesson on the day of my 9th birthday.
Did you have a guitar in the band?
No.
What'd you play
in
the band?
You mean in marching
band? Yeah, like
band?
In the marching band.
I played drums in marching band. Oh, that's so in fifth cool. grade, yeah, but cool. by that time I was already playing guitar. So, you know, they didn't have guitar in the marching band, so I had to choose another instrument. I kind of wish I'd have chose a horn of some sort, maybe saxophone. That's a sexy instrument. But I didn't have the embouchure for it. I had bad teeth growing up, so I didn't have the embouchure. So I was like, well, I'll just play drums. So
was it the three drum thing up front?
I played the tritones. Yeah. But I play snare as well. At one time, I was a decent rudimental drummer. So I can play, you know, rattlesnakes and paradiddles and all of that stuff. But played in some Oklahoma State marching bands and stuff like that.
Back in, you know, how Nashville is, they don't let you do your rattlesnakes or paradiddles anymore.
Well, yeah. They hire people to do the audition process.
I know. Like they get somebody else to do a paradiddle. So you're playing guitar and you're playing drums in the band. I feel the same way about band. For me, I wish I would have just been in the band because I would have loved to have learned how to play a horn just for simply knowing how to read music better.
Uh-huh. Yes.
At the time, I was like, I don't want to get in the band. I get beat up. I get beat up enough. But I wish I would have done that because it would have served me so much better than me having to go get a chord sheet at Walmart and learn how to play guitar like I did. You know, because I'm not in any way talented musically. So I had to kind of like struggle with the fingers. But you're right. Maybe for you too, if you'd learn how to play like a French horn.
True, which is probably, I think, one of the hardest brass instruments to learn how to play.
A xylophone.
But xylophone. And you don't have to march if you play xylophone. You stay there on the sideline. You know,
because really?
You can't roll them around.
Well, no wheels?
If you play the bells, you get the harness.
Yeah, I wouldn't do
that. You get the harness. But yeah, those no girl comes up and says, hey, can you introduce me
can
to
I
the bell
to the xylophone?
Player?
Yeah.
I want to meet the xylophone player. Nobody says that. So guitar, that was the instrument that'll get you a girl.
How long did you play in the marching band?
All through, from fifth grade all through high school.
And did you play drums the whole time?
The whole time, yeah. Well, in marching band, yes. In pep band, in stage band, I played guitar. Pep band, which was we played at basketball games pretty much only. By that time, Greg had already left to go to college, so I borrowed his bass guitar and played that in pep band.
Okay, talk me through these three here, because I'm very jealous of people who played music in band early on. Marching band is, I know that because I played football.
Just football games.
You're out in the middle of the field doing the deal. Okay. Pep band is basketball only?
That's what we called it. Pep band. Yeah, it was our basketball
smaller.
Band. It was a smaller band, so we had a bass guitar, and we weren't marching, obviously. So I could
more
bring
funk.
An amp. I could bring an amp. We did like marching band arrangements, but I would take the tuba part and learn it on bass guitar.
That's cool. Yeah,
so I wasn't a very good reader back then either. I could read one line because I was a drummer. But I knew what all the notes and the lines and spaces were, but I was more of a treble clef guy because I played guitar, which is written in treble clef. This is for all you music buffs.
Classic. Me too. Yeah. Same.
And so bass clef was a little different. So I would have to like get a sheet of music and write the letters under each note before I could actually learn it. And my mom and dad was like, you sure spend a lot of time with this bass guitar? Are you done with your studying? I mean, hours and hours at night, I would just practice the bass part, which I don't even play bass anymore. I just played it. That was 2 years in pep band and that was it.
And then the other one you called it?
Stage band?
Yeah.
Stage band is sort of like jazz band in most schools. We would do like
how many people
funk
on stage?
Arrangements and let's see, it was guitar, bass, drums, and it was a kit of drums, not like a drum line, but a drum kit. And then you would have horn sections. You'd have a couple saxophones,
that's
a couple
the coolest
of trumpets.
Horn.
Yeah, it was really cool. And I don't know why we didn't add a vocal thing. We could have had like a vocal quartet to it, but it was
nobody sang.
No, it was just all instrumental arrangements. Yeah, so like we did Soul Man.
That's cool, but I'd have been
like
bored.
That.
I'd have been bored if nobody was singing. Yeah. But Could you sing at that time?
I could, but I was only singing harmony parts back then. It was before my voice changed, and so I was singing the high tenor vocals in every band I played in back then. So I started
high tenor would be a...
Yeah, the right above the lead vocal.
So it's not even that high then.
Well, it's too high for me to sing now.
Yeah. What's the really high one?
For a female voice, it'd be soprano.
Soprano, yeah. Or for a kid that had his nuts cut off.
We call those castratos. Yeah, castratos. There's an actual term for that.
No way.
I guess we don't do it anymore. But back in the medieval times.
Oh, serious? That's what they used to.
They would take them off and
they call them castratos.
Yeah,
that's a funny band name too.
We should remember that. The castratos.
For the next little parody you want to do, we'll call them the castratos.
This is going to get millions of hits.
Yeah.
We were talking about four castrated
boys. That's really what happened. That's what they used to do back in the day.
Yes.
So you're playing music all through high school. Now, you're talking to your parents, they're you're getting your homework done. Did they think that you actually had a career in music, even if it was music teaching, or were they like, all right, we need to really focus because you're going to have to run the ranch?
Yeah, well, I was fortunate. I had very supportive parents growing up, and they were never like, why don't you put this music aside and focus on something real? They never asked me to get a real job or anything like that. And they knew that one day I was an only child, so I was going to be the one who would inherit the ranch and have to run it one day. But when I graduated high school and moved on to college, they were like, what are you going to study? I said, well, I don't know. I was thinking maybe music education or something musical.
Yeah.
I said, we sure would like for you to consider doing something else just in case, the music thing doesn't work out for you. Maybe just something to fall back on. That was always their phrase.
Diversifying the portfolio.
Exactly. Yeah. So I went to school and I got a degree in business management with a minor in accounting. I can still name four different depreciation methods right now.
I can name none. So
that's all right. Well, then you
won't know if I
got
a line or not. I have no idea if you're telling me the truth or not, if you're just saying words. So where'd you go to college?
I went to Northeastern State University in Tahlequah, Oklahoma.
And I know Tahlequah too, don't I?
Yeah, probably.
Do I know Tahlequah? Have I been there? Oh, yeah. I've been to Tahlequah.
Oh, you went to Sam and Ellis Pizza.
That's where Carrie Underwood used to work at the pizza place. And her big pizza thing is up there.
Sam and Ellis.
And that's where the guy's from. It's where Caitlin's parents went to school. But it's also the guy's from... Turnpike Troubadours are from there.
That's true. Oh, you know the Turnpike Troubadours.
Yeah,
I just got inducted into the Oklahoma Music Hall of Fame last year.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I brought up Tahlequah to them because a lot of those towns, I get mixed up. But
we have a lot of weird Native American names for our towns.
Yeah, and Native American sounds to me are a bit like German sounds, where some of the sounds don't go together in how I would spell out things, mm-hmm, but in their mm-hmm. but so they kind of sound funny both to me, even like Mandarin. It just has a, but the same thing happens where I get them mixed up and I was like, hey, I knew how to say Tahlequah though. And the guy was freaking out from Turnpike. He's like, you know how to say Tahlequah?
That's
I was like,
awesome.
I've been there.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a prom store too there, right? Like a dress shirt store. They used to compete with your moms.
Yeah, we shouldn't give them a shout.
Okay. No shout outs there.
Okay. Yeah. No shout outs.
Yeah.
So, it's funny, but Tahlequah, as you said, it's got a weird, most people couldn't pronounce it if they didn't know how to. The town that Carrie is from. Also, people used to mispronounce her town all the time. She's from Shakota, Oklahoma.
And I lived right near Lake Ouachita, it was spelled Ouachita.
Yes.
And so, again, had I not known, I mean, it's just an odd pronunciation from a guy from the south in Arkansas.
I'm told that Jimmy Webb, when he wrote Wichita Lineman, he actually wrote it as Ouachita Lineman because he's from Oklahoma. And he saw a guy working on some highline wires one day. He thought that's the loneliest job in the world. And it was the Ouachita Lineman until he turned it into his publisher. And the publisher said, I love everything about the song except the title.
All the people in Wichita are pissed right now that you're sharing that. That's like that's their claim to fame right there.
Well, Jimmy Webb, he's our claim to fame. He's Okie.
Hang tight. The Bobbycast will be right back.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. You're talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink, shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah, that's what the whole store basically is, fresh leather,
yep.
Friendly staff. Or like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I guess I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events, there is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com. TECOVAS.com.
TECOVAS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How do the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer shaped the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed as The Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts. That's where they would spur each other and tap into something bigger and something realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Backrack as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter The Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer, and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Listen now at audible.com/theboarsnest. Hey, it's Bobby Bones. I just want to say thanks to everybody who has stepped up for the kids at St. Jude. St. Jude's been leading the way in the world's best survival rates for some of the most aggressive forms of childhood cancer. Your support means that families never get a bill from St. Jude for treatment or travel or housing or food, so the families can focus on helping their child live. And that really hits home for me because I've been to St. Jude many times. I've hung out with the kids, played music for the kids. I was in the hospital a lot as a kid. Now, I didn't have cancer, but if it wasn't for people stepping up, I don't know that I would have been able to go and stay in the hospital and be taken care of. So that's why we do this, to take care of others. You can help St. Jude stop childhood cancer by becoming a partner in hope. When you do this, you'll get this awesome new This Shirt Saves Lives shirt. So join all the doctors and researchers, you know, and me in this fight, and just text the word Bobby to 785-833. It's only six numbers, but text the word Bobby to 785-833.
And we're back on the Bobbycast.
So you're in Oklahoma and you're going to college. Did you end up staying and finishing school?
I did.
Really?
I did. I got my degree in business management, and I went on the road with a band immediately after that because that's what I wanted to do.
After you graduated college?
After I graduated college. I did take a short break. A band that Greg and I had together at the time was
what's the name of it? This is what I like.
This band was called Breakaway.
Okay.
And this band was a group that we had put together from another band that we had been in when we were kids. And we sort of broke away from that band and decided to do our own thing.
Breakaway.
But we went on the road. We got signed to it with a booking agent, and he put us to work. And so I took a year off in the middle of all that. But I did go back and finish my degree there at Tahlequah.
You finished school, just in case.
Mm-hmm.
But while you were in school, were you playing music around?
I was. I actually played in Tahlequah. I had a local band at the time called the Heath Wright Band. I'll never forget. We played this. Tahlequah has a thing. Back then, they had a thing called Pioneer Days. And it was just a weekend out of the summer. This pizza place hired us to play in the parking lot to kind of bring people in. It wasn't Salmonella's. It might have been where Salmonella's is now, but I forget the name of the pizza place back then. And I never forget the sign on the front said, "All you can eat, Heath Wright Band."
So they could eat you all they wanted.
All they want. Yes. All they could eat, Heath Wright Band.
And how often did you guys play while you were in college? Or did you have to not play as much because you really wanted to graduate and finish school?
Well, pretty much weekends. I mean, there was a club in Tahlequah called El Paso City Limits, and we played there a lot. Played, you know, just a few clubs in Muskogee and surrounding areas. So it was just a weekend band.
Did you feel like you were just kind of biding your time until you finished school where you could go and pursue it professionally?
Exactly.
So that was the plan?
That was the plan. I wanted to get the degree, have something to fall back on, like my mom and dad said, and then get out and just start pursuing it full time. And I joined a band, another local band in Oklahoma. And again, they were just doing nightclubs, just the nightclub circuit. And I did that for a little over a year. And I realized I wasn't really getting anywhere. I was playing to the same clientele every 6 weeks. We were on a 6-week rotation. We had like 8 or 9 different clubs that we worked in that area. And so I went back to school. This time, to study music at a small college in Levelland, Texas, called South Plains College.
I'm assuming that's in like north Texas, like Panhandle.
It's out west. No, it's west Texas. It's below the Panhandle. It's south of the Panhandle, but it's just west of Lubbock.
Did you move down there to do that?
I did. I moved there. I already had one degree, so I didn't have to take any of the normal general educational requirements. I think I had to take one history class because Texas requirements were a little different than Oklahoma requirements. But I got a degree in country music. Well, they called it commercial music, but I studied country music the whole time I was there. Country and Western swing.
That's like me getting a degree in people named Bobby from Arkansas. Just already got it. I got to do a lot of work. Yeah. I already know
I knew a lot when I went there because I'd been playing in bands for most of my life, but I learned a lot while I was there too. I'm telling you, I learned about things that I didn't have a whole lot of experience at, being in the studio. And I'd done a lot of recording in studios by that time, but I was on the other side of the glass. So I learned about different types of microphones and signal flow.
A lot of technical.
Yeah, you know, a lot of multi-tracking stuff. Yeah, I learned a lot more about producing while I was there as well, you know, taking a group of musicians and ending up with a finished song, a finished product. I produced a lot of my own student projects. I produced a few other students' projects while I was there. And the faculty, just amazing. Some of those faculty members would hang with me like till 9 o'clock in the evening in the studio, just helping me kind of get my projects finished. From the time I got up every morning at 7 a.m. to the time I collapsed in my bed at midnight every night, I was a better musician. I knew that every morning when I woke up, I was going to be a better musician by the end of the day.
So you're going to school after you had kind of been burnt out by playing the clubs.
Mm-hmm.
Was it with the purpose of learning more so you can go and try again on a different level?
Yes.
Or were you like, I still want to be in music, but I'm going to go learn it. Maybe I'll be a producer.
Well, it was just – so, I mean, if you're going to be a doctor, you'd go to medical school. If you're going to be an attorney, you'd go to law school. So I just wanted to get as much knowledge as I could. But I didn't really want to – and, you know, no offense to people who play in symphonies and stuff. I didn't have aspirations of playing in a philharmonic. I didn't want to study Mozart and Bach and Chopin and all of that. I wanted to study, you know, George Strait and Garth and Restless Heart. And I wanted to study that type of music that was making money, that was out there commercial. That's the name of the degree, the commercial music degree. One of my classmates was Trent Willman, the Cody Johnson's producer. Natalie Maines from Dixie Chicks the Chicks went there.
They probably weren't even a band.
They were.
But with Natalie or a different lead singer at the time?
Different lead. They had Laura Lynch at the time. Yeah.
And so you're going to school down there. And again, are you just looking forward to graduating so you can go start again?
I wasn't looking forward to it. I looked forward to each and every day at that school. I soaked up every single minute of training that I got while I was at South Plains. And they've named a freaking wing of the building after me since then, and I've established a scholarship there. And next month they've named me one of the distinguished alumni, so I get to go and, you know, be part of a big gala. And is it gala or gala?
You could be either one. Yeah. Would you wear a cowboy hat and a robe?
Would I wear a cowboy hat and a robe?
Yeah, if you go as a distinguished alumni and you're wearing the robe, are you going to wear the hat or the cowboy hat?
Well, I don't know that I don't think they do that there. I mean, it's not during the graduation ceremony, but they're just going to.
I'll do it anyway.
You think I should wear the robe with the
be like, I'm freaking distinguished now. Yeah. I got my own wing. I'm distinguished, and here I am. So you finished going to school down there, and then then what? Let's form another band. Let me try solo. What happens?
I had been kind of doing some networking prior to that. I'd lived in Dallas briefly to play in a band that was based out of Dallas before I moved off to South Plains. And while I was there on my nights off, I would go out to the nightclubs and kind of network and just meet other band leaders and guitar players. It's like, hey, I'm playing in this band, but we only work on weekends. We fly out every Thursday. We fly home on Sunday. In Dallas, Texas, there was nightclubs that were open 6 days a week. I said, if you ever need a sub, here's my cassette back then. Here's my business card. And so I had met these guys called Lariat, a band that was based out of Texas, and given them my cassette and my business card. And 6 months later, I get a call from them. And they're like, hey, we're all based in Nashville now. We've all moved from Texas to Nashville, and we got some label interest, but our lead singer is leaving to join his cousin, Tim Rushlow, to do a duo project from Little Texas, yeah. To do a duo project called Rushlow Harris. Because, you know, Tim's had like a 103 record deals, different styles of artists, whether it be I think he's had two bands, Little Texas and a band called Rushlow. And anyway, but he was getting ready to do a duo thing at that time. And his cousin, Donnie Harris was his name, was quitting the band Lariat to go join Tim Rushlow.
Were you marketing yourself as a singer or you could do it all?
No, I was just a guitar player that could sing harmony parts. Ricochet is the first band I've ever been the lead singer of.
So you're still not like, here's my tape of my lead vocals.
Yeah.
It's like, here I am, I play guitar and I can sing with you.
To be honest, I had recorded 4 songs as lead vocalist as part of projects with other bands that I'd been in, bands that Greg and I had been in.
But it wasn't your main thing, like, I'm here to be the lead vocalist.
No, I never marketed myself as a lead vocalist. I was just a guitar player who could sing harmony parts, and that's kind of what I was looking for. I didn't ever consider myself a front man, but they needed a lead singer. They already had a guitar player, and so I said, okay, I'll try that. And so I joined the band, and through no fault of my own, I want to point out, the band fell apart the following month.
Wait, so when you say join the band, did you move to Nashville?
I moved to Nashville to join Lariat, to join the group Lariat, which eventually became Ricochet.
So, okay, you move here. For a month, you're in Lariat. And you're the lead singer of Lariat.
For about a month.
How did it all fall apart so quickly?
Oh, well, again, no fault of my own. The two original brothers of Ricochet, Jeff and Junior Bryant, were the leaders of the band Lariat. And they had signed a new management deal with some guy that he wasn't really a music manager. He owned a carnival business. And he would take his carnival from town to town, and he would tell the Chamber of Commerce, look, I've got a carnival, I'll bring it to your town, and it's turnkey. I've got all the food vendors. I've got all the rides. I've even got a band that can play the beer tent. So it was all turnkey. And so he had a whole summer's worth of dates booked with Lariat, the band I was about to join. And that was one of the enticing parts about moving to Nashville. I knew I wouldn't have to get a real job. I could go to work immediately with a band and make enough money to pay my bills. And then they decided that they didn't have a contract with this manager dude, or they had one that had just run out because they decided to change management. And when they did that, what they didn't realize is the old manager had copyrighted the name Lariat under his name.
So he could just make Lariat appear with him.
Put another band together and called them Lariat. And then that, the whole, he was able to put all of those dates on his new band's roster, and the old Lariat, they were done. They had a new manager, so they couldn't use the name Lariat anymore. And at that point, after we lost all our dates, we started losing band members. So the guitar player quit. He was one of the first ones to quit. I'm like, well, I play guitar too. I can take that over that part. But then everyone started quitting, and it just eventually got to where we were just rebuilding the band.
So who was left? You and
the two brothers, Jeff and Junior Bryant, were the only two. And we had a temporary bass player who didn't want to do it permanently. He was a little older than us. He was in his 40s, and he didn't want to go on the road permanently, so he was like, well, I'll stay with you till you find someone more permanent. That's when I brought my buddy Greg in.
From Oklahoma,
yeah. He had just finished a degree in microbiology with a course concentration in chemistry or something.
He's like, I'll come play music.
So, yeah, I've got my degree now. I can come do what I want, So he was all for, moving to Nashville and joining the band, this new band that I was putting together, and we didn't even have a name yet, honestly.
I mean, you just moved here too. It's like you moved here to be a part of something. Now all of a sudden, you're the leader of putting a band together.
Exactly. So I get to be the guy that starts networking and putting it all together. And so eventually, I think by February of 94, we had it together. We had our last member in place, and we had our vocal blend that I really wanted. I knew I wanted a big West Coast style harmony vocal blend.
What's that mean, West Coast style?
West Coast style, it's like the Eagles. It's when there's two harmony parts above and two harmony parts below. That's sort of the West Coast style.
So it's like a burger with a lot of layers.
Exactly, yeah.
Got it.
Above and below.
So how many are in the band at 94 when you finally say this
six.
Is it?
There's we six. Were a six-piece at the end. So me on lead vocals and lead guitar.
That money. That's too much money.
I agree. But you know what?
I'm going to recommend you did not do that back in 94.
Well, I kind of wanted to have a steel guitar player.
You also wanted to have the hamburger vocals or whatever you called them. Yeah. You can't do that
West
with three
Coast.
People.
Well, yeah, West Coast. You can't really do that with three people. I knew I needed at least five to do West Coast harmony, like a Restless Heart type band. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, I need something to set the music, the bed part of our sound, not just the vocals, but the musical bed, set that apart from everybody else. And I couldn't think of any bands out there that featured a steel guitar and fiddle. We already had a fiddle player. I was the guitar player, but we didn't have a steel. So I talked to guys. I said, instead of hiring another guitar player to replace the one that quit, why don't you let me take over guitar duties and let's hire a steel guitar player. And so that was the last instrument that we had. The last guy was Teddy Carr, and we added him. We found him here in Nashville. Actually, he lived one of the outlying towns. The name of the town escapes me right now, but he had advertised in Dick McVay's musicians referral service. So I found him through that, brought him in, auditioned him. He was great. Wasn't a singer though, but that's all right. I already had my five vocals. So I already had my five vocals.
Can't even take another one.
So
then it's like European vocals. Then West Coast. Add one more. God dang. So you are 6 in. That's just so many people.
It was a lot. And we didn't make a whole lot of money at the beginning because we were only playing nightclubs for like, you know, $3,000 a week. And we'd be there the whole week, you know. And so we were maybe if we were lucky, we were getting about $400 to $500 a week in our pocket.
Did you need that much to survive then, though?
No. I didn't have a family.
Right.
Some of the other guys did. But fortunately, they had wives who had real jobs. So, you know, there's something to be said for that. You know, it's like having every good rancher also has a wife that works in town, has a good job in town, because you're going to have years where you just don't make money in ranching. And for me, that's every year.
What was the name of the band at first when all six of you got together?
Oh, that's when we decided to go from Lariat to, and we knew we needed a new name, and the new manager owned a nightclub in Columbia, Missouri called the Silver Bullet. He wanted to call us the Silver Bullet Band, not realizing that Bob Seger already had that name for decades. And so I said, no, we can't do that. And it needs to be one word, should be two or three syllables, like Alabama or okay, that's four. Restless Heart. That's two words, but still three syllables. So I'm
you're
thinking,
over two here.
Yeah.
Over two here. Yeah,
I'm still thinking, trying to something that would be memorable, you know, but it's only one or two words. And so our manager's his wife come up with a name. How about Ricochet? It would look cool on the marquee outside if it said the Silver Bullet presents Ricochet. And I'm like, yeah, I like it, Ricochet. And after Shenandoah broke up, you know, because there was a little time when they broke up, we were the most misspelled band in country music.
I don't know that I can spell Ricochet right now. Look at the page. R-I-C-H. Wait,
ooh,
hold on.
No. Ah, thank you for playing.
Don't do me. Okay, hold on. Ricochet. R-I-C-O-Shay.
That's right.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Ricochet.
Ricochet. C-H-E-T.
R-I-C-O. Yeah, that's right. I closed my eyes, though, so you know I was cheating.
I noticed.
I'm a man of integrity.
I've read that about you.
Yes. So you guys are playing. There's six of you. Are you good?
We were actually fairly good, I thought. Because we were just naturally good, I think because we put the work in. Like I said, we would be at a nightclub for four or five nights at a time back then. We were just playing dance sets, you know. And so during the day, I told the guys, I said, you know, if we were working real jobs, we'd be working 8 hours a day. So why don't we get together and do a vocal rehearsal this afternoon? Let's learn a new tune for this, you know, we'll add it to the show. We'll go down to the club and rehearse it, you know, make sure it's good. And so we spent a lot of time just putting in the work. And figuring out exactly where everybody's vocal was going to be in the mix, and figuring out, you know, parts and making sure everything was in tune and in pitch and in time, paying a lot of attention to, like, when we would work up someone else's song, like a Diamond Rio song or something, making sure that all of the parts were right. You know, I'm a huge Jimmy Olander fan. I was just we just did a show with him this past Saturday, and Jimmy's got this cool guitar that's got double benders on it. It's hard to explain, but it's you can't just buy a guitar off the wall that's got these benders in it. You have to have them specially installed. There's a guy here in town named Joe Glazer that does them. And so I had to have the same thing. I had to have a guitar with double benders in it. So we would work up a lot of Diamond Rio stuff and make sure that all the parts were right. Vocal parts, mandolin parts, guitar, whatever. And so anything we did, whether it be a Tracy Byrd, Tracy Lawrence song, Restless Heart, whatever, we took great pains and efforts to make sure that our covers of those songs were right, you know. And I don't know that a lot of cover bands did that back then. So when you ask, were we good? I think we were. I think we were one of better cover bands out there at the time.
So two things, but one, it sounds like you're now, well, first you were the guy moved, and for a month you were a role player in a bigger band that you were like, hey, I can fill in and I can take that job. Mm-hmm. But now you're the general. I feel like you had to take a leadership position quickly.
Pretty much. I don't know if the two Bryant brothers just weren't cut out for that, or if they just didn't want the job, because there's a lot of work that goes along with leading a band. So I was the guy that carried the credit card and kept track of the receipts and all of that stuff. So
you're the guy with 2 degrees.
I have a business degree too, so that didn't hurt. And I actually read every contract that was put in front of me, every word of it. I'm probably the only guy in the original Ricochet band that read all 64 pages of our recording contract. So,
you have type A personality?
Oh, yes.
Do you know what your Enneagram is?
My what?
The Enneagram number?
No. See, I don't even know what you're doing. It's like you're speaking a whole other language.
I am. It's
right
Mandarin.
Now.
I mentioned it earlier. I'm pretty good at speaking it. I definitely feel a lot of type A in you, which I think is pretty cool. You are with the group. There's five people. It doesn't matter.
Six of
five plus you. You
okay,
five.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter who the six are and if you all love each other. That's a hard dynamic
It is.
Just because you have 60, I mean, I do the radio show and I have all my best friends, and there are still times we want to kill each other, mm-hmm. even though we love each other. We've been together 15 years because it's just six different attitudes, personalities, people. And so now you're also probably having to manage that, which isn't really what you knew the dynamic was you're going to be managing. So were you like the dad?
Oh, probably not. Gosh, I don't know. I was probably the problem child, honestly.
You can be both.
I guess, you know. I've got a weird personality. I've got, you know, I'm very meticulous.
Like you put them through boot camp to play.
The guys used to love playing tricks on me. For example, when I get into a hotel room, I have to take everything out of my shaving kit and line it up. You know, all the toothpaste and toothbrush right here, and then the deodorant and the cologne here, and then the shaving stuff over here. And I did that every so I wouldn't leave stuff behind. So I did that every single time.
For organization reasons.
Yeah. So the guys thought it'd be funny as hell to take one of those little trays and super glue all my stuff out of order. And so just little things like that.
Pretty funny.
Although I'm
more like you than them, that's still pretty funny.
That is. Yeah,
anytime you get super glue involved, it's pretty funny.
I guess that's when I decided we had too much time on our hands and we need to do more focus.
More work. Were they ever like, Heath, chill out, man. We don't want to practice every day.
No, I was lucky. You know, like Eddie Kay especially, he was great. I don't think I ever outworked him. He was great at just like, he was our vocal arranger. So if we did anything that was non-parallel vocals, like, you know, when the melody goes up, so do the harmonies. When the melody goes down, so do the harmonies. Parallel vocals. If we did anything that was like counterpoint or any, you know, choral type singing, if we did anything, like, for example, we did a acapella version of Let It Snow. He arranged every note of that. Our acapella version of Star Spangled Banner, he arranged every note of that. That's pretty meat and potatoes, but he's just got that kind of mind. I think it comes with being a keyboard player. So I was lucky to have a group of guys that had a good, strong work ethic, and there was no lazy ones in the band, not even the original band.
How did you go from cover band to band that's doing their own songs? Transition doesn't always happen.
True. We got lucky, honestly. It was during a time when country music was going through some changes, and they were kind of losing a lot of bands. I mentioned Little Texas had taken some time off the road. Restless Heart, Larry had left the band to go out and do a solo thing. As a matter of fact, our original guitar player went with Larry Stewart. Other bands like the Gibson Miller Band and the Pirates of the Mississippi, they just disbanded. And so country music was needing some bands at the time. And so we got lucky that an A&R guy from Columbia Records heard us one night at a nightclub. And as I say, you know, the rest is history.
Wow, so he was just there and heard.
Well, I think it was arranged for him to be there. I believe somehow our manager had a friend of a friend that somehow knew Blake Chansey.
Did you know he'd be there?
Yeah.
Like a ball player? No one,
we were nervous.
Scouts up there?
Yeah, we were very nervous.
Did you make him work extra hard that day, like four sessions?
No, I think we probably rested that day. So
double West Coast vocals?
So be fresh. So be fresh for the big record producer that was going to be in, or the A&R guy that was going to be in the audience that night.
Did he come up to you guys after the show, or did he reach out like a couple days later?
No, he came up to it. We met after, we had a few drinks afterwards, and he says, I really like what I hear. Let me go back and talk to some people. And I think he did it just as a favor to his dad. Blake Chansey was his name. His dad was Ron Chansey, the big producer of the Oak Ridge Boys and T. Graham Brown. And Ron was the friend of our manager. So we managed to get in touch with Ron. Ron got in touch with his son, Blake, who had just taken over the A&R position at Sony Music. And so Blake did it as a favor to his dad, but his intention was to say no. His intention was to come out here, give us a listen. Oh, and he also brought a guy named Cliff Aldridge with him. And so he wanted Cliff to hear him so that he could put the blame off on Cliff. Said, no, it's just not what we're looking for. But they got back to town and they had a meeting the next day or the next week, whatever. And Cliff said, well, I think it's one of the best live bands I've ever heard. I said, but they're just a cover band right now. But I think they have potential. They have an original sound, so I think they have potential. They have great vocals. And he sung our praises, and Blake was looking at him. He was like, you're supposed to say no, you know. But it worked out.
Were you guys writing anything at the time, or were you just practicing to
not a lot.
Make a living?
We weren't writing. I was new to the songwriting game. I had just learned how to write a song at South Plains College, you know, the year before that. I took a songwriting class there. It was part of the curriculum. And so I was completely new. So I'd done some writing. One of the reasons I brought Greg into the band, because I wanted him to be a co-writer on the road with me. He and I had written some when I was home for vacations and stuff. Greg is naturally talented at that sort of thing. He's really good. And so was Eddie Kilgallen. I was new to it. And still my main contribution to a co-writing session is chord patterns, melodies, things like that. I'm not a great lyricist. But, you know, I could at least lend that to a songwriting session. We didn't do as much writing as I wish we had, because I wish we would have had a whole bunch of songs to turn into our label and say, look at all these songs we've written. Let's record 10 of those, you know, but we didn't. And so we ended up, for the first album, nobody got a single song on the first album. I'd had a publishing deal in Nashville prior to that, so I did manage to get some songs written here in town with some great songwriters. And I thought one or two of them was good enough to be on the album, but apparently the label thought otherwise, so we didn't get anything.
Whenever you're a cover band and then all of a sudden you're assigned a band, how does your life change, or does it at first?
Oh, it does. Everything just goes in. I mean, it seems like it takes forever from the time they tell you you're going to get signed to the time you start working on the project, and then it takes forever to get the first song to radio. But once that first song hit radio, What Do I Know came out in November of 95. And I'll never forget, it was just a whirlwind after that. I mean, we'd been on a radio tour 6 months prior to that, kind of introducing ourselves to the program and music directors and stuff, and just kind of making sure that they knew who we were. And that was grueling. And sometimes we'd hit 3 radio stations a day. And we did that for 6 months all over the country. So and
that was a top 10 song too, right? What Do I Know?
Yes, it was. It went to number 3.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So, well, pardon me. It's a top 3 song.
We were trying hard to get a number 1 out of that one as a debut single, but it didn't happen.
The Bobby Cast. We'll be right back.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. Talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store. Have a complimentary drink. Shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah. That's what the whole store basically is. Fresh leather.
Yep.
Friendly staff. Or like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I guess I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events, there is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com.
TECOVAS.com. TECOVAS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How did the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer shaped the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed as the Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts. That's where they would spur each other and tap into something bigger and something realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Backrack as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter the Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer, and the birth of outlaw country music. Listen now at audible.com/theboarsnest.
Hey, it's Amy Brown here to talk about the incredible work that's being done by St. Jude Children's Research Hospital and to ask you today to join me in becoming a partner in hope. When you make a donation to St. Jude, you're helping an organization that has helped push the overall childhood cancer survivor rate from 20% to more than 80%. And I can tell you from personal experience, that number and the hope that it brings is invaluable. Families do not have to worry about a thing. Treatment is covered, travel, housing, food. And when you're a family that's going through this, like imagine you're a parent, your kid gets cancer. You need to focus on that child. You don't need to be worrying about other things, and financial stuff can get really stressful. St. Jude covers it. Your support means families never receive a bill from St. Jude for treatment. And when you sign up for just $19 a month, you're going to get the new This Shirt Saves Lives tee. So join me in helping St. Jude in the fight against childhood cancer. Become a partner in hope and text Bobby to 785-833. That's B-O-B-B-Y to 785-833.
This is the Bobby Cast.
So that song is doing what it does, right? It's radio stations are playing it. Are you guys playing shows as that song is climbing? Can you feel the crowds getting bigger?
Oh, yes. We're playing some of the same nightclubs we had played as a cover band, but we're playing our own music at
hard
this
tickets
point.
And people yeah, are coming to pay money
some
to see
hard
you guys.
Ticket shows, and they put us on tour. They got us on a couple major tours. We went out on the Double Trouble tour with Marty Stewart and Travis Tritt. We were on the TNT tour with Tracy Lawrence and Tracy Byrd, and then eventually the John Michael Montgomery tour. We won our first ACM when we were on the John Michael Montgomery tour.
What was that ACM for?
It was for new vocal group or duo of the year, 1996.
What's it like back in Vianne now that you guys are on the radio? I got to imagine.
Well, everybody's like, over
that's
it
our
now.
Not now, but then.
Oh, back then it was awesome.
Yeah, like 97.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. We used to play a show back in Vianne at the football stadium, and we donate all the proceeds to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital because there's two boys from Vianne who both ended up with leukemia, both treated at St. Jude, and now they're both adults. So me and Greg talked about it. If we're ever in a position that we can do something for this hospital, we need to do it. So we started doing this thing called Green Country Jam back in Vianne. And it was just people would come, you know, that was always a difficult day because everybody wanted to get on the bus. And how do you tell your friends, no, we can't get this many people on the bus. And plus, we're trying to get ready for show. And now we got to leave, you know, right after the show, but that sort of thing. But so my tour manager came up with this this test. If people actually knew me, then they could get on the bus. And he knew how to test them because my full name is Perry Heath Wright. And in school, I went by my first name, Perry Wright. But then after school, I didn't think that sounded real show busy. I decided to start using my middle name, Heath. But most people back home still call me Perry. Caitlin's uncle still calls me Perry half the time. So, that would be the test that our tour manager would hear knock at the bus door and open up and say, I'm old friends with Heath and Greg. I said, really? What do you call him? What'd you call him in high school? Heath. Nope, sorry. If they said Perry, he'd let him on the bus. So
Vianne loves you. Nashville loves you. You're doing this festival. How long did you do the show at the high school? How long did you do that?
I think we did that for 5 years, I want to say. We started in 96 or 97. Dixie Chicks were on the show that year. They hadn't even had a record deal yet. They had a record deal, but they were in developmental still, so no hits yet. And Emily, the banjo player, she and I used to date.
I've heard all this, but I know all this. I'm just
you
like,
knew that.
Well, because Caitlin would tell me these stories. And I wasn't going to bring it up.
Oh.
Because it's not my business to bring up your business, but since you're bringing it up, I know all this because Caitlin would be like, yeah, I met the Dixie Chicks back in the day. And
You were at that show. Awesome. Oh, awesome. Yeah. So, yeah, the Dixie Chicks were there on the very first one, the inaugural show of Green Country Jam. And they had just played in Las Vegas, New Mexico the night before. And they pulled up in their little RV. And you could tell they were exhausted, but they got up and did a hell of a show. Just amazing. And a couple other of my friends were on the show that year. And I'll never forget the year that we did it. One of the last years we did it, Joe Diffie was on the show. And Joe, as you know, is an Okie. He brought his mom and dad out to the show. And my mom and dad were there as well. And my mom and Joe's mom sat on the bus and chatted like they were old high school buddies. It's so good to see them get together. Joe refused. At the end of the day, we would write checks for at least expenses because we wanted to give as much money as we could to St. Jude. But we would reimburse these guys for their payroll and their bus fuel and their bus lease or whatever their expenses were. They would just give us an invoice and they'd say, all right. Joe refused to take a penny in expenses that day.
So he took a loss.
He took a loss. He definitely. I don't know if it was a routing date for him or if he just – and we only asked him to fly out and do an acoustic set. And we would pay for his plane ticket and all of that. And he says, I'm going to bring my whole band. And the reason he did that is because we had played his – he had a charity show for First Steps. I don't know if you remember that. Mm-hmm. He had a country show he used to do at the Ryman every year called Country Steps In for First Steps. And we played it like the 4 or 5 years prior to that. So he – I don't know, maybe he felt like he owed us, but he was such a good guy, refused to take a penny in expenses that day.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You guys have a record deal. The song goes number 3. What do they come with second?
After Daddy's Money. Daddy's Money was the next. We would have released Daddy's Money first, but what do I know? We weren't the first ones to get our hands on it, or maybe we were. It was written by 3 great songwriters, Stephanie Smith, Kathy Majeski, and Sonny Russ, and they all had different publishers. And so no one knew who got the hold on the song first because the publishers were pitching it around town. So we both us and Linda Davis recorded that song at the same time. We knew that if we released Daddy's Money first, that we would probably lose What Do I Know as a single. So instead, we went with the more mid-tempo ballad, What Do I Know? And we didn't even release a video with it because we spent all of our promotions budget on a tour, a a radio tour, you know, 6 months prior to that. Anyway, we managed to get What Do I Know released, and then it went top five, number three on Billboard, or R&R, and five on Billboard, I think. And then we were free to release Daddy's Money, and that thing shot up to number one like in 16 weeks.
Yeah, I was going to ask if it felt different from the moment that it hit than the first song.
It sort of did, because there was a video on that one, so we were more recognized after that. A lot of people would come to our show before that, and they would, you know, they knew that there was a free show at, you know, Little Bit of Texas in St. Louis or whatever, and so they would come out and listen to us, and then we'd do What Do I Know, and I said, oh, I didn't know that was you guys that did that, because there was no video on What Do I Know, but Daddy's Money had a video attached to it, and so there was a lot more recognizability there.
And that song is so catchy. we'll still play it sometimes on my show.
Awesome.
Caitlin also sings it all the time too. Walking
Does
around
she?
The house, yes,
God bless you, Caitlin.
All the time. So that song, you say 16 weeks is what it took to get to number
16
one?
16 weeks, as I recall, yeah.
Now, did it go away quickly because it shot up so fast, or did it stay for
it
a while?
It stuck at number one for 2 weeks, which I guess was pretty good back then, because yeah. I remember everyone being so surprised that it was there for a second week. Because we, like you said, we were kind of expecting it to be more of a, you know, in and out kind of song. Let's be honest. It's that song's not going to cure cancer. It's not really saying anything.
It's a fun
change
song.
The world. It's just a fun song.
It's a fun, song. Catchy song.
It's fun and
sure.
catchy. And you know, it served its purpose for that summer for us. We needed a fun, catchy song for the summer, and we released it, and it went to number one and got us a whole lot more recognition and even got us an award. And so, you know, we were lucky to have that song as part of our career.
Did you ever feel like you resented the song?
I resent it every day when I try to sing it now, because we still do it in the same key.
You have, you have to. Yeah, that would be tough enough.
It's so high. It's just so damn high.
I can see that. Did you ever feel like, because I didn't even know all the words. I just knew the melody from hearing on the radio. And then Caitlin would sing it so much. I know every word of the song now, because
uh-huh,
she really? Sings it all the time. Yeah, every word. And so did you ever feel like, and I say this because I think I love the song, and I look back at that time in my life, and it brings me back to that time, right? That's what music does. It takes us back
People
to that
tell
time.
Me that a lot. Yeah, because that music is the soundtrack of your life, you know?
And so I remember, you know, where I was at that time. But you have this song that you say you didn't get a single cut on the record, and they had you put in, it shot up. But were you ever like, I wrote songs better than this? And
well,
put it on the record.
I might have had that thought a time or two, but the truth is, it's those little simple, catchy songs that
absolutely
that sound so easy. But they're not that easy to
I
write,
agree.
You know? I mean, who would even think about that scenario, about this guy being all, you know, confused and not being able to pay attention to the preacher because he's got his eyes on this girl in the choir loft, and that's all he can think about. And now he's praying to God, if you got any miracles handy, just grant me one. Let me walk down the aisle and say I do to that angel with the choir robe on. You know, that it's just little scenarios like that don't come every day. And I've heard that Mark D. Sanders used to write along those lines a lot. He always would have some sort of little religious thing in his songs, like Walking in Jerusalem, Tracy Byrd, he wrote that. So he would put some sort of little wholesome, churchy thing in all of his songs like that. And who knows? I mean, I really thank Jeff Carson for showing up at the right time. Do you know the story behind Daddy's Money?
I don't.
All right, settle in. It's a long story.
All I know is that I would hear it as a kid and be like, more laughs than a stack of comic books were lines, and I'd be like, I don't read comic books. This must have been an older dude who wrote it. That's what I used to think.
Well, it's three older dudes. It was, I guess you can call them that now, but it was Mark D. Sanders, Bob DePiro, and Steve Seskin. They're sitting in a room one day at a publishing company trying to come up with something to write about, right? And there's a window there in the room that they're writing in, and they see this young demo singer named Jeff Herndon pull up, who eventually would become Jeff Carson. So Jeff pulls up in this brand new Jaguar. And he's just a demo singer. He hadn't even got a record deal yet, as far as I know, and absolutely no hits. And the guys start talking, well, how the hell can Jeff afford to drive a Jaguar? I mean, he's just singing demos, as far as we know, and he maybe has a publishing deal, but, you know, hadn't written any hits or anything. And I believe it was Mark D. said, well, have you seen that woman that he's married to, Kim? Not only is she gorgeous, apparently she's got her daddy's money, too. Voila, they had something to write about at that point. So I used to thank Jeff. I used to say, man, thanks for showing up at just the right time. And thanks, Kim, for letting him drive your car that day, you know.
Oh, that was her car, too?
It was her car.
Oh,
yeah,
that's funny,
yeah.
too. So when they say, okay, you guys, you sound awesome live, but we need a record now. So this is this song called Daddy's Money. What did you think the first time you heard it to record?
I heard it over the phone for the first time. I was at home in Oklahoma. The record label had given us a small signing bonus, and so I took my $2,000 or $3,000 to the sale barn that day to buy some heifers. And that's how I wanted to invest my record bonus, my record signing bonus. And so my dad and I, this was before cell phones. I didn't have a cell phone. My dad and I would have to sell all day long. And we came home. My mom says, son, somebody named Uncle Ron just called you. I said, Uncle Ron, that's Ron Chancey. That's our producer. Well, he says you need to call him back immediately. Something really important. So Uncle Ron Chancey plays that song. He says, we just got this tune in. And if we don't put a hold on it soon, we're going to lose it. So he played it for me. I listened to every word of it, the whole demo. Ron Wallace sang the demo. I'll never forget. Great vocal. And I thought, that is the silliest damn song I've ever heard.
What was the...
but I said, look, we got to hold it because it's going to be a huge hit. I can already tell. You know.
Sonically, obviously on a phone though, but when the demo, was it a fully produced demo?
Yeah, or
was
fully produced.
So it had demo. Like electric guitar?
Yes,
had,
yes. I don't know that it had fiddle and steel on it, sure. But it was a full band production. It wasn't just acoustic guitar vocal.
But it was catchy as crap. You could
it was. And you know, like you said, more laughs than a stack of comic books. Country is a turnip green? Mm-hmm. Come on. These are just phrases that I know are going to stick out and be memorable. People are going to remember these phrases. So I thought, and I like the melody, and I like the way it kind of soared up in the chorus, so give me a chance to kind of stretch out on my high range. And so I was like, yeah, I love the melody. It's a silly little lyric, and I think it's going to be catchy enough that people will love it. So
did you have the expectation that it would do what it did? That
oh,
one,
30
all
years
the
later?
Songs on the record. Oh, no. just even at the time, the thing goes number one. Are you like, I can't believe that's the one that did it, because we have all these other songs.
Yeah,
too.
I knew. I'd been studying country music trends for a long time. And a lot of times it's the silly little songs that are always going to be huge hits, because they just
are fun to sing by everybody else who buys music or listens to music.
True. Right? Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it was just, I just had that commercial appeal to it, you know, because like I said, I'd been studying country music trends and songs and for most of my life, because I knew I wanted to be part of country music one day. So when I can't bring one to mind. Right? White Lightning. I bet when the first time George Jones heard White Lightning.
And like the burp thing
Yeah.
Whatever that is.
The hiccup. Yeah. You know who wrote that, right? The Big Bopper wrote that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, and I'm sure that when George Jones heard the Big Bopper.
By the way, Big Bopper, everybody listening. Hello, babe. Yeah. Chantilly lace. That guy.
Guy wrote White Lightning. So I'm sure George thought that's the silliest song I've ever heard, but it's going to be a huge hit. Mm-hmm. So I kind of felt the same way about Daddy's Money.
Let's take a quick pause for a message from our sponsor.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. You're talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct-to-consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store. Have a complimentary drink. Shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah. That's what the whole store basically is. Fresh leather.
Yep.
Friendly staff. Or like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I guess I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events, there is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com.
TECOVAS.com.
TECOVAS. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How do the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer shaped the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed as the Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts. That's where they would spur each other and tap into something bigger and something realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Bachrach as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter the Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer, and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Listen now at audible.com/theboarsnest.
Hey, it's Bobby Bones. I just want to say thanks to everybody who has stepped up for the kids at St. Jude. St. Jude's been leading the way in the world's best survival rates for some of the most aggressive forms of childhood cancer. Your support means that families never get a bill from St. Jude for treatment or travel or housing or food, so the families can focus on helping their child live. And that really hits home for me because I've been to St. Jude many times. I've hung out with the kids, played music for the kids. I was in the hospital a lot as a kid. Now, I didn't have cancer, but if it wasn't for people stepping up, I don't know that I would have been able to go and stay in the hospital and be taken care of. So that's why we do this, take care of others. You can help St. Jude stop childhood cancer by becoming a partner in hope. When you do this, you'll get this awesome new This Shirt Saves Lives shirt. So join all the doctors and researchers, you know, and me in this fight. And just text the word Bobby to 785-833. It's only six numbers, but text the word Bobby to 785-833.
Welcome back to the Bobbycast.
So you go and the song crushes number one for 2 weeks, which doesn't even happen a lot now, much less then.
True.
At the time. True. So and people are seeing you on CMT?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, CMT and GAC.
Are you starting to get recognized just randomly? And do you wear a cowboy hat? Would you wear a cowboy hat out? Because I would if I were on a music video.
Well, back then I didn't wear a hat. Back then I had the award-winning mullet, dude. Come on.
No, I don't know that version of you.
Oh, really?
No.
Well, you gotta watch the video sometime. Yeah. It was a beautiful haircut. Really was.
Never seen. Do you remember him with the mullet?
That's all I knew.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I just started wearing the cowboy hat after I moved back to the ranch in 2008.
Yeah, see, I don't know you without the cowboy hat.
Oh, how cool is that? That's kind of neat, really. I only know the cowboy version.
I need to see this. What is?
Album cover, right? Oh, no, blue. It was a baby powder blue shirt, which was a gift from Emily, believe it or not. I don't know if I ever said that in an interview or not. That powder blue shirt that I'm wearing on the cover of our debut album was a gift, as well as the boots, the ostrich boots I was wearing, was a gift from Emily Irwin from Dixie Chicks.
Okay. Heath Wright hair.
I still have the boots, and somewhere I probably have that powder blue shirt. Somewhere
I did Heath Wright hair, and it gave me a hair salon.
Just put in daddy's money.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you play videos on your podcast? Are you allowed to do that?
Well, yeah, we can put it in whatever kind of clips.
Cool.
Daddy's money video. I feel like I'm gonna be shut. Oh my god.
Yeah, oh, it's award winning.
That
is
very popular
haircut, Bobby. It's a very popular haircut.
That is crazy and long and. Mm-hmm. There's a vest. You're in a vest.
No,
somebody's in a vest.
Just it's a banded collar shirt with a black ring. So
look at the hair.
Oh yeah, I'm wearing a frock coat. Look like a preacher in a frock coat.
This is wild. Look at you. All right.
So we added "What Do I Know" at the beginning of this video right here, so that the people would know that those guys that sang "What Do I Know." Are the guys you're about to see.
That's a good idea. Who had that idea?
Somebody in the A&R department, or maybe marketing department. Probably somebody in the marketing department at Sony.
Dude, I wouldn't even recognize. If you walked in looking like that, I would be like, who is this dude? They said Heath was coming over in the cowboy hat. Dang, that's good. So what is it like? How old were you then, you think?
I was 27.
I mean, were you married?
No, I was 28.
Were you married?
No.
What is that?
I had to get married to my mid-30s.
What is that like? You're 27, 20. You get hair like that. You're traveling the country. You're single as a Pringle. Mm. I imagine those got to be pretty good. You get all the heifers you want, right?
Life did not suck. I'm not going to lie. It did not suck back then. I lived my single life, and I lived the hell out of it.
Were you in Nashville? Were you living in Nashville and coming back to Nashville, or were you back in Oklahoma then?
No, I was living in Nashville. Like I said, I moved out here May 18th, 1993, and we got signed to Columbia in March of 95. So everyone said it's a five-year town. Be prepared to be here for 5 years before anything happens. But as I said, we were lucky because Nashville needed a band. The several different labels were losing their bands, and so they needed one. So we got signed within 2 years of my moving here.
So when you moved back, was there a time – how did you guys end the band whenever you ended it the first time?
We have never ended the band. Greg and I, my buddy from Vian, we kept the thing going. We just didn't have a record deal. And so everyone thought that the band disbanded. And we lost a lot of, you know, most of the original members. I'm the only original one left. So, you know, some would say, why don't you just go solo and do the solo thing? And I've always answered that with, I like being in a band. I like the dynamic of a band and the big vocals and just their West Coast vocals.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's just something different about a band energy. That's, you know, it just feels different than being a soloist.
And also the name. There's some
There's some name recognition.
Sure, yeah, with Ricochet. Exactly. And if you do a video as Heath Wright, then you got to put both songs at the beginning of that video so they know that you sang all those.
True.
And by the time you do it, you got three songs in, you haven't even played the video yet. You know what I mean?
That's a good point. It's a good point, yes. I don't know how I would do that. And who knows? I may do something as a soloist one of these days because I've got the freedom to do that now. I'm in creative control of any project I record at this point on. So we've talked about doing a Heath Wright of Ricochet album someday. Because there are certain songs that you can record that might not lend themselves well for a band because they don't lend themselves well to big West Coast style harmony. And I'd like to record some of those songs. I've got a whole bag of songs like that I'd love to record some one day, but they just haven't been right for a big band to record.
I feel like you invested your money wisely.
If I had money, I think I would have invested it wisely. I've invested in my ranch, and there's anybody, I tell people the best way to become a millionaire in the cattle business is to start with $2 million. It's just, I don't know how my dad did it. My dad managed to put me through college just selling cows, and he was a...
Are you being humble?
No, I'm not wealthy man, not at all. I might one day know what it's like to be a millionaire, but that hasn't happened yet. So I'm happy doing what I'm doing.
How much does a heifer cost?
Right now they're really high. I'm getting ready. I hauled five grown cows, and I think they were all pregnant. I'm having them preg tested, but they sold, what is today, Tuesday? They sold yesterday, and I expect to get, for a pregnant cow, I expect to get about $800 to $1,000 each for them.
And so what does it cost to raise that pregnant cow to that point?
Well, I'm selling my herd down right now because cows are really high right now. They're about $3 a pound. So
alive?
Yeah, on the hoof. Yeah, on the hoof, they're $3 a pound. Now, hamburger meat is $3 a pound. So I should be, if I had all the FDA, I should be taking them to a processor and selling them in a package as opposed to selling them on the hoof. But there's a whole lot of FDA stuff you got to go through.
Skip them
for that.
Who needs them?
Yeah. Who needs all that governmental stuff?
Yeah, who needs them? Yeah. Do you still enjoy the ranch life?
Some days I do, and some days I just want to haul them all off right now. But the other day, Sunday, I was working cows. I was trying to get everything done before I came out to Nashville. And so I was vaccinating and ear tagging and cutting the bull calves and just trying to get everything ready because I'm going to start hauling them. I'm getting rid of most of my herd right now. So and about midday, about 5 o'clock, we had this cow jump over the gate and get her dang leg hung in the gate. And I couldn't get that thing out. We couldn't. For 30 minutes, we tried getting hacksaws and sawing the gate off the hinges. And I was afraid she was just going to die on me, just going to lay down and die. And we worked for half an hour just trying to get that cow free of the gate. And when I finally realized that I bought this new thing, we call it a hip hugger, which you kind of clamp down on the hip bones of a cow. And you hook a rope or a chain to it, and you put her on your tractor and lift her up. That's the only way we got her out. She survived somehow. But at one point, I was afraid I was going to just have to shoot her in the head.
Like moving a piano, it feels like. Like you have to lift it and swing it.
Yeah. So that's kind of what we did with the cow. Only we lifted her up by its hip bones, basically. And she's fine. I mean, she's running around. I've got her in the pasture of cows that I'm about to sell. So she's going to be fine. And she's a young cow. I think she's only 3 or 4 years old.
Let me re-ask the question then. Do you sometimes still love being a rancher?
There are days when I love to go out on my tractor and watch them when it's early in the morning and I'm watching them graze and all the fences are up and I haven't had to haul off anything that just laid down and died, because cows will find a way to either just lay down and die or kill themselves in weird ways, like what just almost happened with this one cow. When everything's going perfect and I didn't have to spend thousands and thousands of dollars on hay or fix fence the day I was supposed to leave for a road trip or whatever, when things are perfect and the sun is coming up or going down and I can watch them out there grazing on my ranch, that's when I really love it. But days like Sunday that I had, when I'm trying to keep one from killing itself or trying to get them all run through the chute before it gets dark and get them all vaccinated and ear tagged, and it's tough. It's not, ranchers aren't for sissies. Being a rancher is not.
That's why I'm not one. That's exactly why I'm not one. So Ricochet, The Hits and More, Then and Now came out mid-August. It's out now. Mm-hmm. And again, you said there are 6 or 8 new songs on there.
6 new songs, yeah. 10 new songs, 6 re-recordings of the hits.
Got it. This has been awesome. We've done over an hour here.
Seriously?
Seriously.
That went by fast.
Done over an hour. The Keep You Loving Me is the single from this record, right?
Well, that's a good question. I guess you could call it a single from the record. That one, Sweet Tea, are two of my favorites on here. I co-wrote both of them. What You Leave Behind is another co-write of mine.
They're all singles.
I guess you can. That's look what it I that like. Way. Yeah, I mean, we kind of released to the DSPs six.
Look at you with your DSP lingo. Talk about vaccinated and ear tagging and then digital. Yeah, come on.
So yeah, we've sort of released six singles to the DSPs, but we're, I guess, you know, at this point, we're just hoping that people either download the project or let me talk about this for a minute. We have partnered with the Wounded Blue, and I don't know if how familiar you are with the Wounded Blue, but it's an organization out of Las Vegas, Nevada, whose sole purpose.
Adopt-a-cop.com.
You can go to that website and donate $20 or more, and they will send you one of our new CDs. We donated boxes of CDs to them, so we're hoping to help raise money for them because their mission is to help out wounded law enforcement officers, and you know, you'd be surprised. Over 120,000. Law enforcement officers were intentionally attacked in the last 2 years. That's on their website. I pulled that from their website, and it's just amazing how much they do for us, and it gets overlooked. I've said it 100 times. I think that the three most dangerous words ever spoken in this country were defund the police. I'm not a fan of that movement. This is our way of trying to counter that movement.
I think we should fund the ranchers is what I think.
Hey, why not?
We should just give you money for no reason.
Just come give me money. And you could, you know what? People do that. People will come to a ranch just to stay on it for a few days. Well, no, they call them dude ranches.
No, they don't.
Well, you know, dude ranches, for the whole ranching experience. And they'll actually help you. Well, not yet, but I'm working on it. I'm building a barn dominium so that people can come spend the weekend with me and bring your work gloves and, you know, give me a couple $100 a day.
Yeah, they pay people you, will, and then they
pay me, and then they help me do my work. They help me fix fence. They help me work cows.
They didn't grow up in the country then, because I ain't doing that.
I
did too much of that crap. I haul too much hay. I work too many. Yeah. That's some bull crap.
Don't tell them, man. Yeah, tell them. This is a part of the ranching experience.
Well,
folks,
all you rich city slickers out there, the ranching experience with Heath is a really great place.
Mm-hmm. You never know. We might get a cow, a leg hung in a gate or something. Yeah, that's the.
That's got to pay extra for that.
Well, you do have to. If something like that happens, you got to pay extra. Yes.
Caitlin, did I miss anything? Is there anything? We won't put you on camera if you don't make it. You want to talk into the microphone so we can hear you? Okay. Don't worry. You won't be on. Just come over here. Well, we can't hear you. You're yelling from across the room. It is. It's interesting to everybody if it's interesting to you. You're the most interesting person I know. Come here. Thank you.
No, I just wanted to say thank you for singing at my grandpa's funeral.
Well, I was honored. He was a great man. He was, as your uncle said, I don't know how Jeff got through that eulogy.
Yeah.
That was the best eulogy I've ever heard at any funeral. And Jeff told me the night before, he said, here's the songs that I want. And it's like 5 songs. I'm like, Jeff, normally at funerals, you don't do that many songs. And he says, yep, but I want these. And it was like up-tempo songs like Will a Circle Be Unbroken, mm-hmm. things like that. And I was like, well, these aren't really normal funeral songs. I mean, you know, funeral songs are like Amazing Grace and It Is Well With My Soul and stuff like that. But he says, no, I want this to be a celebration of life. JB was a great man. He and my dad were good friends. And I was honored to get to sing it.
Well, we were very thankful. And I got to talk to Greg briefly after, but I didn't get to thank you. So I just wanted to thank you. It meant a lot.
Thank you. I thank Jeff. He called me up that night. I said, thanks for having me at this, man. I was really pleased and honored to get to do it.
Good.
That's all.
Okay. You guys follow Official Ricochet Band on Instagram. Check out the record. And again, go to adoptacop.com and donate, and you'll get a record there as well. That's an DSCD. There we go. That's it. Thank you, guys.
Thanks for listening to a Bobbycast production.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop before attending your next concert. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. Stop by your local Tecovas store. Have a complimentary drink. Shop new styles. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com. TECOVAS.com. You can probably spell it. You probably know it. Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.